Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, we better start to lower that one down.
Are you gonna do it? Oh, come on!
No! No, I had to turn it down.
Aww. You're such a tease.
I know, right?
Such a tease. I love that song, too.
I do, too. That's one of my favorite Death Steps. That is by one Mr. Dr. P, if you're looking for him on YouTube. Go ahead and grab that and throw it up in the car.
Get you. I will never get used to this new Twitter.
See, I told you. See, these bunch here, they've been laughing at me. Oh, Corey, there's no new Twitter. It's just you. It's coming to you soon if you haven't seen it yet. I don't like it at all.
Give me back my old Twitter. At least give me the option of going back, you know?
That's what it was before. They would ask you if you'd like to stay with the old or the new. Remember when they changed it once before? But it wasn't such a drastic change.
At least, you know, I'd be okay if they'd let me move things around where I want them.
That's what it should be. You should be able to drag your windows because I don't like that my feed is on the right.
Yeah. See, that is the reason why I loved MySpace. And I wish...
Towards the end, anyway.
Yes, towards the end. You could totally make your page exactly how you wanted it. And I loved that. And Facebook and Google Plus does not offer that. I've been trying Google Plus. And, you know, I'm not used to it yet, so I can't give a full opinion, but I'm liking Facebook better because it's not so empty. Plus, that and the stupid is trying to link all my different profiles. No. I don't like that. Stop that.
Well, you know, that's a new security setting. It is why it's linking your profiles. I just saw that this morning when I logged into one of my Gmails. So you have to go in there, and there's a security setting that says you want to enable multiple logins. So that's why it's forcing you to log in all of them. It's connecting them. But that setting, I think that setting should be defaulted off, not on. I think it's really weird.
Yeah. Yes, but I swear, if they would take something like Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and MySpace with the whole being able to arrange your layout, oh, I'd be in love. Somebody out there make that. You'll make... $1 million. No, you make $1 billion. $1 million.
One.
Yes, I totally did the pinky thing.
You went to the... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You make a lot of money.
Okay, so wait a minute.
Do it like my nephew says. $1 million.
All right. There's so much deliciously delectable news out this morning.
Oh,
I got to go first because you're not stealing this from me.
Oh, you go first because then I've got something that's probably not true, but
oh, good.
There is a story about an assassination.
Oh, okay, so this one is not an assassination. It's not as juicy as that. However, we would like to give a hearty congratulations to our German gaming sister and brethren because your government decided not to sign ACTA. Wait a minute.
Yay! And I'm all muted, and I'm saying yay!
Let me get my applause since Ginger's not applauding. Yay.
I was jumping on my chair, and I was going, yay! It's up to you, so I'm muted. This whole weather back and forth is going to kill me. I'm off my lungs.
So...
Yay! Down with that!
So Germany, which had said it would be following along with the rest of the European Union in support of ACTA, which is, if you don't know what ACTA is, it's the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement or another form of PIPA and SOPA, just German. They have decided not to sign the treaty, according to an Armenian news website, which is citing government sources. Much like the response to SOPA in the United States, online activists in Europe have been able to generate vigorous pushback through petitions and blackouts of certain sites. And while the movement against ACTA began on the internet, protests are actually being held in 60 cities tomorrow in Germany. Venturebeat, how I love thee. Venturebeat is reporting that while 22 out of 27 members of the EU have signed on to ACTA, Many are now changing their track in response to the public outcry. This is the Slovenian ambassador to Japan, Helena Dvorak-Zorko, who had signed, says, "I signed ACTA out of civic carelessness because I didn't pay enough attention." She says, quite simply, "I did not clearly connect the agreement I had been instructed to sign with the agreement that, according to my own civic conviction, limits and withholds the freedom of engagement on the largest and most significant network in human history, thus limits particularly the future of our children." Ah, Helena, I commend you for signing, but you should have been paying attention, and all of our politicians need to be paying attention.
Yes.
Get it together.
All right, people, this may just be a rumor. It may not be true at all. You know how North Korea is. All right, Chinese Twitter says Kim Jong-un was assassinated this morning in Beijing. All right, so the Chinese microblogging service Weibo has exploded with rumors that the new North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was assassinated today at the North Korean embassy in Beijing. Of course, you know how Twitter rumors are, but what it says is, according to reliable sources, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un was killed in Beijing on February 10, 2012, at 2 o'clock and 45 minutes. Unknown persons broke into his residence, shot, and were subsequently shot and killed by the bodyguard. Of course, as I'm saying, anything on the internet, can't really believe it, but if it is true, this is going to be big news. Apparently, Chinese news sources are still speculating about it, and there have been pictures posted showing an unusual number of vehicles parked at the North Korean embassy. So maybe there's something behind this. I know, this has nothing to do with gaming, but that's still big news. And this is all Twitter. I love Twitter. And Corey either got dropped or...
I'm muted and talking. Wow. Okay, so other news. Hollywood, who hates us so much, also wants to do something with us.
We're the dirty redheaded stepchild.
Yes, we are. Well, we're not even a stepchild. We're another offshoot. You all are the reason why we existed, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
We like our Entertainment Interactive. You just like us to watch. We don't like to watch. You're the voyeurs, and we get it done. All right, so EA and Starbreeze Studios, who made The Chronicles of Riddick and The Darkness, have announced that celebrated actors Rosario Dawson and Brian Cox, if you're not familiar with who they are, these are stars of Sin City, Men in Black 2, The Bourne Identity, will headline the Hollywood cast of the game The Syndicate. I'm assuming this is a game, but let me get on deep down into here. We'll find out for sure. The Syndicate is a reimagining of EA's cult classic from back in 1993. No, it looks like a movie. The stars take on the role of cutthroat executives working for the biggest and most aggressive syndicate, Eurocorp, in a near-future world ruled by three corporations. It's a unique and brutal sci-fi first-person shooter experience that blends fast-paced action in futuristic settings with an innovative gameplay mechanic where players can hack into and violently extract the mind-controlling chips embedded in people's brains. Syndicate immerses players into a token world of scrupulous corporations. Could you hear that? Did you hear me go?
No, I didn't.
Thank God, it was disgusting. Unscrupulous corporations and chip-augmented enforcers. This is from Mikkel Nermek, who's the CEO of Starbreeze Studios. He said, "These agents are weapons of this war for market dominance, and we need strong talent to represent these intense characters. Since we are honored to have worked with these incredible Rosario Dawson, Brian Cox, and Michael Wincott to make the world come alive." Dawson, who's the famed actress of Unstoppable, Sin City, and Grindhouse, plays Lily Droll, the rising star of Eurocorp. With a shattered and conflicted psyche, Lily is torn between the demands of corporate matters and the underground resistance to the syndicate rule. She knows that this balancing act can only last for so long before she falls, most likely to her death. Anyway, you can find out more about this. They're still not saying if it's going to be... Okay, no, it is a game. Okay, so the Syndicate is going to be available just a few weeks. It's February 21st here in North America, February 24th in Europe for the PlayStation 3 computer entertainment system. No price yet, but you can pop over to our site here in just a minute to find out more about Syndicate. They're also releasing some remix tracks of the original theme song done by some DJs, including Skrillex. Digitalism and Flux Pavilion, if you're interested. And they also have a Facebook page. It's Syndicate. And, yeah, you can get the rest of the links from us.
Yay! So head over there and get the links. Yes, yes.
Word.
Word. All right, what have we got? There's so much news out there. All right, I got to do this one just because this one is cute. So cute. Well, all right, Snow called it sad. GamePolitics.com, divorce rates and Maple Story lower than in real life. I talked about this last night for a very short little bit, but it's got a whole story. It's pretty sad when people have a better chance of staying married in a virtual world than in real life. But that is apparently the case if you compare the divorce rates in the MMO Maple Story with real-world divorce rates. All right, so VentureBeat recently talked to marriage expert Athena Carrillo Lee of Mind, Body, Spirit Therapy in Los Angeles about MapleStory marriages and why people get involved in them. All right, so what she says, some players might forge online partnerships because they see it as advantageous, the way some might marry for money. No offense to those of you with to those of you with those values.
Others, ooh, that would be me.
Others who play in order to socialize might forge a partnership because they wish to flirt, romance, and marry, as these are certainly social activities. She also adds, if someone is only capable of social interaction at this level, then I'm grateful they have some level of interaction. But marriage is a mess, even in the virtual world. They say, as we reported last year, most virtual marriages end in divorce. Sadly, for those looking for romance and Maple Story in 2010, the odds were against them. In 2010, 26,982 in-game marriages were performed, and 20,344, that is 75%, ended in divorce. The good news is that North American MapleStory divorces dropped to 46% in 2011. According to divorcerate.org, the divorce rate in America for a first marriage is 50% and up to 67% for a second marriage. By the third marriage, we'll call this Newt. 24%. Compared to MapleStory divorces, it seems as though the odds are better for the fake marriages. Wow. All right, well, way to go, MapleStory people. I wonder what they're doing differently this year compared to last year.
Well, I guess we'll find.
2011 compared to 2010, I guess I should say.
So the marriages are up, or divorces are down.
You know, they don't say. They just say the divorces are down. So I don't know if the marriages have increased.
Or people are just staying together longer.
Yes, if people are staying together longer, or if they're not getting married as often, and the ones who are staying together.
Well, that is fantastic news for some of you.
Mm-mm-mm. Yes, yes, because we love our pixel other half.
Yes, I do. All right. Big Fish Games, which we're given some love because we have a love from Gaminatrix at Big Fish. Hi, Zach, can I say your name? Anyway, it's too late now. Big Fish Games is expanding their cloud gaming research. Minister for Jobs, I love their titles over in that neck of the woods. Enterprise and Innovation Richard Bruton today announced that Big Fish Games, the category leader in premium casual games with more than 2,500 unique titles and 1.5 billion downloads, is continuing to enhance and expand its cloud gaming research and development initiative at its Cork, Ireland operation. Big Fish's cloud gaming service will run the company's casual game catalog in the cloud, which allows for its games to be accessible to customers on a variety of devices and platforms via interactive video streaming. This dedicated research initiative by Big Fish will involve the recruitment of 30 highly skilled software engineers who will be located in the Cork RD&I Center, representing the largest research and development project undertaken by Big Fish in Ireland to date. As this is an exciting development for the wider games industry in Ireland, Big Fish's investment is supported by the Irish government through IDA Ireland. Big Fish is also one of the main contributors to Games Ireland Gathering, called GIG, taking place on the 15th of February of this year,
yes,
at Dublin's Gibson Hotel. Stephen Hegarty, Big Fish's Director of European Business Operations, located in Cork, Will O'Brien, General Manager of Big Fish's Cloud Gaming Initiative, and Ian Herlock-Jones, Big Fish's Chief Technology Officer, will be on hand at GIG to discuss the upcoming opportunities and technologies. Making the announcement, Minister Bruton said, as part of the government's plan to address the employment crisis, we are determined to build on the sectors of strength we have built up over the recent years, as well as selecting new sectors where Ireland can become a world leader. Over the past 20 years, we have built up a base of multinational companies in the IT sector, which is the envy of many other countries. However, now we must target those areas where the growth of the future is going to spring. such as cloud computing and digital gaming, today's very welcome announcement shows what is possible in those areas. The task now is to build on news, and in the coming weeks, the action plan for jobs will outline a series of policy changes to target sectors such as these to create the jobs and growth we so badly need. Speaking to the announcement, Jeremy Lewis, Big Fish CEO, said much like Netflix changed the way we view movies today, allowing film entertainment to be instantly accessed to over 800 devices, Big Fish's cloud gaming service will transform the marketplace for premium casual entertainment by bringing our millions of mainstream customers that much closer to the thousands of wonderful games created by our in-house studios and game development partners. As the trusted leader in premium casual entertainment, Big Fish will be delighting consumers anywhere, anytime, and on the platform of their choice. That's what I like.
I'm sorry. Every time you say Big Fish, I'm like, man, I'm hungry.
I don't even like fish that much, but tasty. So you can read the rest of the story, of course, on our website, GameAndMatrix.com. Ha, ha, ha. Along with the story Ginger just posted of something about pigs and trees.
Pigs and trees. Where is that? Hold on. I've got that. I got to talk about that. Dude,
it's not pigs and blankets. It's pigs and trees.
Pigs and trees. Here we go. I knew I had it. I just had to scroll back. All right, so Pigs and Trees is Danish Game of the Year. Yes, yes. I'm wondering if this is anything like Angry Birds. At Danish Games Awards on the 9th of February, the smartphone game Pigs and Trees was awarded Best Danish Game 2011. The game has over 800,000 downloads on iOS and Android, and with over 1,100 user reviews, the iPhone version has an average score of 4.5 out of 5. That's not bad.
Ooh, that's very nice.
That's very nice. All right, so Pigs and Trees was a really fun concept to develop. It started as a war game mixed with inspiration from an old Japanese anime with a pig pilot. The game transformed into an action game that involved the lion and happy bought a pill, which anyone could easily learn to play. This is coming from Alfred Nguyen, creative director of Pigs and Trees, who together with the rest of the team is very proud of the award. All right, so this is up on the iOS store, on the Apple store, and for the Android market as well. There is no price on this, so I have no idea how much it's worth. But I've got the links for you up on GameAndMatrix.com this morning. If you head over there and check it out, I'm sure you can find out how much it is. Yay!
That is very, very nice.
Nom, nom, nom. You want me to do another? I got another.
Oh, if you would like, please.
All right. Arma 2 firing range for all Android devices. All right, so in collaboration with Idea Games, Bohemia Interactive has besieged the Android market with the release of Arma 2 firing range for all Android devices. Ooh. All right, so Arma 2 firing range is the ultimate firing range simulation using accurate high-polygon weapon models used in the award-winning Arma 2 tactical shooter video game. People will be able to download Arma 2 firing range, including one firing range, three weapons, and three levels in career mode for free. Oh, yes, I said free. We love us some free. The complete collection of firing ranges, weapons, and career mode challenges can be unlocked for $1.99. That's less than $2. That is cheaper than a thing of coffee. All right, so the game is compatible with all Android devices 2.3 or higher and is now available in the Android market. All right, so Arma 2 firing range allows shooter enthusiasts to experience the extremely realistic Armaverse. Pick a weapon from dozens available. Examine it within an interactive 3D preview and study its specs or try it out once. All right, so what all we got? Game features a huge array of weapons available to examine and try out. Special weapons, sniper rifles, grenade launchers, and more coming soon. Several unique firing ranges with customizable game modes. Accurate weapon visuals, sounds, and ballistics. Real weapon optics. Online leaderboards and achievements. Yes, for you, achievements. That name that I'm not allowed to say on daytime. Two adjustable control modes. Oh, yes. All right, so again, this is available for the iPhone, the iPad, in the App Store, and for all 2.3 or higher Android devices. So head over to GameAndMatrix.com and check this out.
Fantastical.
Yes.
Absolutely fantastical.
Nom, nom, nom,
nom. I'm scared of Ginger. Are y'all scared of Ginger? I'm scared.
You should be. I don't know why I'm all wired. I'm like, whee!
I just drank a 5-hour energy, so mine is going to hit me any minute now.
Well, it's not just me. And it doesn't help that I'm, like, trying not to cough while I'm reading these, and I'm so congested.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want to know this. I know you do.
What? Oh.
I'm all congested. I'm dying over here.
We are congested, but, you know.
Texas weather. It was snowing yesterday morning during the show. By afternoon, it was warm enough that I was able to go walk at the park without a jacket.
It was snowing? That's not good.
Yes.
Okay, well, in case you weren't listening last night, let us tell you again about Double Fine with their Kickstarter, and we're about to get on Kickstarter. I'm going to talk to Ginger after the show. Brilliance just hit me as soon as the 5 hour
yes.
It hit me just now during the show. Ooh, yes, Ginger and I will be talking. But
like
Double
Fine.
We talk quite a bit during the day. We talk each other to death. Well, I talk Ginger to death. Ginger tries to get away. It's kind of like a Pepe Le Pew thing. You know, Ginger's trying to get away, and I'm Pepe, and I'm like, Ginger's like, no. But anyway, Double Fine Adventure has shattered a Kickstarter record by raising a record $1 million in 24 hours. There's a lovely picture of them circulating the web, and they're all holding up glasses. Some of them look like they're empty, or they could be beer. Who really knows? But honestly, if it was me, I would be celebrating, too. I gotta say. Ginger, did I lose you?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Oh.
I'm still here. I keep muting myself so y'all won't hear me coughing my head off. It's horrible.
Bad Ginger. Okay, so I'm like, where did she go? Okay, so
no,
anyway,
here.
Earlier this week, crowdfunding site Kickstarter set a new record when the Elevation iPhone dock became the first project to close in on the 1 million mark. But that milestone has officially been bested. In its first 24 hours, gaming studio Double Fine Adventures Kickstarter project has raised more than 1 million, and it shows no signs of slowing down. Double Fine's Tim Schafer tweeted a photo of them, if you can go over to their Twitter and check it out, of them celebrating their 1 million mark. As GamesBeat reported yesterday, Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert are legendary gamers from the golden age of PC gaming, and they've created classic LucasArts adventures such as Maniac Mansion, Secret of Monkey Island, yes, we said Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, and Grim Fandango. But in the era of Angry Birds, publishers weren't willing to take a risk on a new project from the duo. As Schafer put it in the Kickstarter video, publishers would laugh in his face if he asked for the funds to do an old-school adventure game. But legions of fans are always asking for it and offering to pay. So they turned to Kickstarter hoping to raise $400,000, just $400,000, and offer fans a chance to watch the creative process, pitch in ideas, and even star as characters in the game. There's an unprecedented opportunity to show the public what game development of this caliber looks like from the inside, Schafer said, not the sanitized commercial posing as interviews that marketing teams only value for their ability to boost sales, but an honest, in-depth insight into a modern art form that will both entertain and educate gamers and non-gamers alike. The incredible response to the project is to give Double Fine a lot more leeway in how it crafts the game. Additional money means it can appear on more platforms, be translated into more languages, and have more music and voice, and an original soundtrack for the documentary, and more. The team wrote this in an update after passing its goal by a wide margin. This is fantastic news. Congratulations to the guys over at Double Fine.
Yes,
rock.
And if y'all want to share any of that, I will come sit in your lap.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so what do we got?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will sit in your lap. It'll be good. It'll be so good. What am I hearing? I'm sorry, there's some... No, not you. There's just some weird other noises going on around here. All right, so... Ooh, there's a sale going on. We love us some sales, especially if they're shoes. All right, so Konami drops price on Ash 2 Shadows for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch. No shoes, but hey, it's still a game. We love that. The public announced a sequel to critically acclaimed role-playing game for 99 cents for Silver Edition or $2.99 for Gold Edition starting today through February 21st. Konami Digital Entertainment today announced that Ash 2 Shadows app for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch is now available for 99 cents for the... All right. So, Ash 2 Shadows follows the events of the award-winning Ash, featuring a new story, quest, and characters set in the world of Agoth. I probably said that wrong. Anyways. In Ash 2 Shadows, the world of Agoth is once again in peril, and the heroes of old must heed the call to embark on another dangerous adventure. Players join characters Nicholas and Damien as they pursue new quests, discover ancient mysteries, and find unexpected allies. With a brilliantly original tale and stunning HD hand-drawn graphics, Shadows features heart-pounding classic RPG gameplay with innovative touch-based controls. Two Shadows, yes, is now available on the App Store for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch, which I already told you. And I've got links and a logo and I think maybe even a trailer up on GameNatrix.com this morning. So head over there and check that out.
I'm sorry. Mm. I'm picking out which one of these Double Fine guys I'm going to send topless pictures to.
Better not.
I know you want it. Mm-hmm. They know they want it. Always go where the money is. Like Ginger said, new shoes, baby, new shoes.
New shoes.
All right. So we've had a bunch of mudslinging going on between Google and Facebook.
And it's not even the fun mudslinging.
Yeah. Well, yesterday we didn't get to talk about it last night, but Google made reference to Facebook's games area being ghetto, and now Morning and GamesIndustry.biz is saying that games can ruin online communities. Google is saying they're taking a cautious approach to introducing games to its Google Plus social network. In a presentation at the Indie Social Apps Conference in San Francisco, Google Plus Engineering Director David Glasner, that was so up north, so Canadian, Glasner, explained that the company's strategy is informed by mistakes made in other online communities. He says, "We've seen communities ruined by games." He says, how do we find that balance between people who are interested in games without having the problems of more spam? It lifts the slender veil, and it's clear that Glasner is referring to Facebook, of course, which has become increasingly reliant on revenue generated by social games companies like Zynga. Indeed, according to Facebook's recent IPO filing, Zynga accounted for 12% of the company's total revenue. Yes, you heard what I said, 12% of Facebook's revenue in 2011. Wow.
You know, about this whole IPO and going on. So if Zynga leaves you completely, that's 12%
of your revenue. 12% of their revenue gone. That's a large chunk. It doesn't seem like much, but that's a lot. However, despite the enormous popularity of Facebook as a gaming platform, Glasner claims that Google's research indicated equally strong user demand to restrict activity to chat, comment, and sharing. He said, we saw equal amounts of anticipation and people who hope we never allowed games on Google Plus. He said Google Plus has no more than several dozen games and a limited number of APIs for developers with which the company chooses to work. Glasner insisted that more APIs are coming and more third-party developers will be given access, but Google is still refining the platform to eradicate spam and allow users to control the spread of social games. He says, what we're trying to mostly do is put control in the hands of the users. He said, first and foremost, you choose your audience. In October last year, a Google engineer published a critique of the company's strategy for Google+, calling it a knee-jerk reaction. The following month, Facebook co-founder Mark Zuckerberg suggested that Google's ultimate goal was to build their own Facebook. According to data released in January, Google+ now has 90 million users worldwide, closing in on Zuckerberg, with 60% of that number active on a daily basis and 80% active on a weekly basis. And I'm trying to migrate over there a little more because we keep telling you guys this. It's not going to be an overnight thing. It's not going to you wake up one day and Facebook is dead. It's going to be a gradual moving over, and that's what's happening.
Yes, if anybody was around, several of y'all were around, you younger generation won't really remember how MySpace went.
Mm-hmm.
This is exactly how it started. You know, there was these rumors about Facebook, and, you know, and a couple of people started moving over slowly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people had two. They had the Facebook and the MySpace, and then they kind of abandoned the MySpace. And, well, you know, MySpace is dead. Well, it's still around, but I don't know anybody who uses it.
Well, ours is all automated. I think I only pop over there when somebody has to be a friend with somewhere. In the beginning, there was tons of people that were asking, you know, to be friends on MySpace, and now we probably get one or two every 4 or 5 months. But everything else is automated. All of our news and everything posts there. So if you're still hanging on to your Facebook and you want to keep up with us, you can still do it there. But generally, we don't check. And it's
you mean MySpace? You said
yeah, MySpace. Oh yeah, we'll see. I'm already. So, but the thing is, I think Google has a great opportunity here since they're watching this to get quality games. Now, Zynga, we love you.
And don't spam us with your game requests. Not that
yes.
I don't like playing some of the games, but I don't like being spammed, and I don't want to spam. friends either.
I don't like that. Yeah, I don't like that it forces you to do it is the problem. It forces you to send stuff to your friends. Because also, as we all said, that we don't like here is the new feed. It makes it worse. Before, sometimes, believe it or not, guys, as well as we all get along here, sometimes we need our private time away from each other. And maybe Ginger's telling me she's going to bed, but she's really going to Facebook. And she just don't feel like talking to me, which I, if anybody who knows me, doesn't bother me. Sometimes I don't feel like talking to them either. See, if Ginger's playing a game on Facebook, now I see her. Now, if I was any other person, my feelings are hurt. Oh, Ginger didn't want to talk to me.
Man, I've had people do that, too, because they know I've got, like, three different Facebooks, and somehow you're able to still see them, even if you're not supposed to be able to.
Yeah, all this.
I see you over on the other one. Why are you ignoring me? Oh, good Lord, go away.
I hate if I even open my Facebook, which I haven't. I try not to open it as much because we've been so busy here. People get offended. I'm opening Facebook to check something, you know, make sure our stuff is posting up because people will be like, well, I didn't see this, you know, this morning you were talking about. So I'm checking. The second I open it, bam, bam, bam. Hey, Corey. And if I don't answer, people's feelings are hurt. So I'm just like, I try to leave it.
Some of you people, I don't know what is wrong with you, but y'all get butt hurt over the stupidest thing.
Yeah, and really, it's nothing to do with you personally. But I think Google is in a prime position right now. Since you've seen what was done, instead of going the way of Facebook like they're saying, you have a chance to get some really good developers, some quality games that don't always spam. You know, create a game section where it's not, you know, all crazy. That's the other thing I never liked about Facebook. You have trouble finding games, which is why we don't do a lot of reviews, because you can't get past the ones you're already playing. It's not like a channel, you know, where you go and you say, okay, I haven't played this. You literally, I have to go into my game like I'm going to play it for something else to pop up at the bottom so that we can go find it, which prevents us from really doing some reviews of some of the really good ones, because I got to sift through 15 to find this one.
Yes. Oh, and that's another thing about Google Plus that I like, is that you don't have like one extensive friends list. You've got circles of friends, so I can actually separate y'all. I can have the people that I just do these little games with, and then I've got the ones that I just chat with, and then I've got the ones that I actually do other games with.
It's organized, is what it is.
Yeah, it's all organized. I don't have to spam everybody. I can spam only the ones who actually, you know, are okay with being spammed.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. So fantastic.
I like that.
Fantastic job, Google Plus. We wish you luck. We're already over there. If you're not over there and you want us to send you an invitation, shoot us an email. We'll invite you. You shouldn't have to get an invite now. It should be automatic. As soon as you have if you have a Gmail account, you have Google Plus. You just got to turn it on.
Yes, Google Plus. Hated my Ymail. It was so sad.
Shh. You're giving too much information.
This is true. All right. So, anything about that?
You can stop.
Alright, what am I looking at? Alright, go back up here. Star Supremacy continues to prepare for upcoming expansion. Star Supremacy's upcoming expansion, which involves two new gameplay features, Alliance and Planet Domination War, is coming soon, and Jubilee is launching another 3 rounds of warm-up events to prepare for the upcoming expansion launch. Military ranking in the meantime will be applied to ship's attributes. Thus, the highest-ranking general of the Air Force will be no longer appearing as just an eye-catching title. This time, we will send military XP, arena XP pack, as a free event bonus to let you taste the quick military XP grow before the expansion. Who wrote this? All right, so anyways. This is like 2 days old. Thank you, people. We love you. Starting around 1900 on the 8th of February, which is 2 days ago, a GM will announce to all players the GM colony location. During 1900 to 2100, players could capture the colony, and when the event ends at 2100, GM colony will be protected by the shield. All right, so anyways, this is old news. This is definitely old news. The next event is going to be February 12th at 1900, and the third event is going to be February 16th at 1900. So if you're playing this game, if you want to get in on this game, I've got links up on GameAnatrix.com this morning. Head over and check it out.
Yay.
Yes.
Okay, look here. When you're looking at that Double Fine picture, I like that one dead center. Yeah. He looks like he had a few drinks. He's right to the picket.
Did you give me it?
I'll tell you about it later. He's dead center. He looks like he's right for the picket.
Yeah, y'all see it? She's going to totally claim people without letting me, you know, have any kind of vote.
Hey, I get first dibs on the shoes, okay?
Chelsea, I am so unloved, so abused.
It's not. It's out of love. Mm-hmm. All right. So those of you who are looking to get involved in this whole digital, I was going to say divide, but it's not actually a divide. Well, I guess it is kind of. Silicon Valley's got a little bit of competition. You know, we're not going to have this too long. This is way too long. You can look that up yourself. Helsinki is the new Silicon Valley. Let's just say that. Let me move to a different story because that's way too long. Helsinki. Don't ask me. I'm terrible at geography. I will not lie to you. It's in Finland, I believe. Yeah, it is. Finland.
No, so, sorry.
Yeah, that's the new hotness is in Helsinki.
I have to learn to talk, and all of your guys are blonde, and I like the dark-haired ones, and yeah, no.
Are you checking them out, too? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No.
Oh, you've been in Finland. Well, we can dye hair, girl. We can dye hair. It's no biggie. All right, well, LinkedIn, in case you are not familiar with LinkedIn, you probably should get familiar because LinkedIn is up and coming. They always have been, but, you know, it's all about a trend. You got to be there when this happens. So LinkedIn has announced today their earnings, with revenue making an impressive 105% jump.
Wow.
The company is a business-centric social network that aims to connect people for networking, job opportunities, resources, more. In May of last year, the company completed its initial public offering to a good reception, but then leveled out in the third quarter. LinkedIn's revenue topped at $167.7 million in the fourth quarter, 67% of which was revenue generated by the United States. 33% of total revenue has actually come from LinkedIn's premium subscriptions. These are pay-to-play subscriptions for heavy users and job seekers. Sales are predicted to total between $840 million to $860 million for the year. The website was the 36th most visited web property in December of 2011, according to a report by Comscore. The company's stock is up 6% in hours after trading. You can check out more about stats from LinkedIn. Let me share with you really quickly. Fourth quarter revenue was $167.7 million, up 105% compared to $81.7 million for the fourth quarter of 2010. Fourth quarter net income was $6.9 million compared to the net income of $5.3 million for the same quarter last year. GAAP EPS for the fourth quarter was 0.6 cents. Non-GAAP EPS for the fourth quarter was 0.12 cents. And for the full year of 2011, revenue increased 115% to $522.2 million from $243.1 million. GAAP EPS increased to 0.11 cents from 0.7 cents. And so on and so forth. Basically, they made a crapload of money. If you are not on LinkedIn, again, it is the new hotness. They're also one you might want to watch as far as being a good social network. They're very organized. They have – I love their groups. You don't actually have to create a page at all. Theirs is kind of static, but it's more business-centric, which means you don't really need to create a page. But there's great context without giving away your anything you don't want known. Put it that way.
That is cool. See, I've had a LinkedIn page for – forever, several years at least. I just never use it.
Most people don't, but you probably should. Get on in there.
I have to go over there and update it. I don't even know what information I have. My luck, I have. I may want to go over there and check what information I have. All right. So, my go. We got so much craziness going on. I don't even know where I want to start from. All right, I guess I'll start with this one. GamePolitics.com, Rocksteady co-founder urges UK government to offer tax incentives. Rocksteady co-founder and game director Sefton Hill, has called on the UK government to offer tax breaks to game studios before it's too late. Hill says it is time for the UK to support its game studios to match the benefits offered overseas or risk losing them. Yes, there has been a big brain drain going to Canada and the U.S., of course. A lot of my friends have moved abroad to get work. There's a real talent drain, Hill says in an interview with CVG. Montreal is a central place for development and is mainly because the tax breaks they give are so phenomenal. It's a real shame because home computers were so popular and the bedroom programming scene was so big. That sounds hot. We have some of the best talent in the world in this country. The situation is rapidly changing, and it's such a shame. We have great developers here, but those numbers are dwindling. Recent data from Taiga suggests the UK's game development community has shrunk by around 10% since 2008. The study also found that two-fifths of those lost jobs were relocated to regions where the tax incentives were more favorable. Companies are relocating to Canadian regions such as Quebec, which offers a, 40% tax break on production costs. That's hot. All right. So Hill also goes on to say, you just think about quality developers like Bizarre Creations, BlackRock, people who are making really good games and going out of business. Those guys were so talented. So how can that happen? I just think that we could have been in Montreal's position with that backing from the government. It's such a big industry now, and we could be world leaders. Bryn's home computing history is just incredible. He's kind of got a point. And 40% tax breaks. Who could say no to that?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at this guy again, deciding how I'm going to sit in his lap and get these
really
shoes.
Really? Is he that hot?
No, he's not
I
hot.
Need...
No, I shouldn't say that. He's cute. I'm just saying, you know, I'm thinking shoes.
You know, just because she doesn't find you hot doesn't mean I won't.
Baby, I will feed you. You don't need her. She can't even cook. I'll feed you. Let me go. I'll say, Rod, I will keep you focused on your focus. I can feed you. Okay.
I don't know how to work that credit card. Just keep it.
See, she's going to McDonald's. Don't trust her. Don't trust her. I'm actually looking at them on the Kickstarter page. Wow. There's people that are sitting right next to them on the front page of Kickstarter that are probably like, damn it, just click one more square over. One more square over. Oh, that's horrible.
We're bad. We're horrible.
You know what? We're going to get a chance to meet them. They're going to be like, hmm.
Yeah, we remember what y'all said.
Mm-hmm. Which one of you was the one asking for the shoes?
And that was her.
I'll own up to it, and I will sit and slap when I say it. It was me. Just sit right here. All right. So before we go to break, I wanted to tell you at the Dice Summit, there are some games that are kicking butt and taking names. Those three games are Skyrim, Uncharted, and Portal 2. They've all won multiple prizes at the Interactive Achievement Awards, the DICE event in Las Vegas, which is spelled obviously. Bethesda's RPG was the major victor, collecting the award for Game of the Year, alongside prizes for Best RPG, Excellence in Story, Engineering, and Direction. Uncharted 3 took Excellence in Animation, Art Direction, and Visual Engineering, while Portal was awarded the trophies for Best Character Performance for Stephen Merchant's Wheatley Best Music and Connectivity. The IAAs are held each year at DICE by the Academy of Interactive Arts and Sciences. Each year, the Interactive Achievement Award sees the top minds and personas of our industry coming together to not only celebrate, but recognize one another for the achievements of the year, said Martin Ray, president. 2011 produced an outstanding number of fantastic games in all areas of industry, console, PC, social, and mobile. We are truly witnessing a new golden age of gaming. Bravo to the winners. I don't know if we're witnessing a new era. We're witnessing a new era of some bad games with very few that are standing out because there's just nothing else. Not to say these games aren't good, but Skyrim, Uncharted, and Portal are pretty much in a year, if we had a lot of really good games, they're not, you know, upper echelon, put it that way. But the reason why they're standing out is because there's really nothing else. You got just a few games this year. They forgot about two of them. What about Batman and L.A. Noire? And Ginger's muted. Batman and L.A. Noire.
I am.
didn't get any love, apparently, from the IAAs, but they were good games. But I'm not seeing anything. In all honesty, when I'm looking at my Xbox list, I'm not seeing people that are, you know, constantly playing the same thing because it's good. It's because there's just nothing else. Whereas, you know, in a year when I think Halo came out, it had like, you know, 15 to 20, you know, serious contenders to take, you know, to take the crown. Now it's like, well, these are good.
I know, and I keep flipping between games. I'm like, yeah, these are right. This is good. This will hold my attention for a little bit. And then I play it, and I'm like,
Exactly. So, maybe. All right, so we're going to play my little bit of a song this morning because we're about to go into break in about a minute. You guys,
break time.
Yeah. You guys know where to find us. Gamer Girls Radio, GamerNatrix.com.
Facebook, Twitter.
Even Google Plus.
Mm-hmm, and apparently on LinkedIn.
Yes, I got Google profiles. I'm like, get in my Facebook.
Oh, I love it.
Whoa, down comes and unsticks the
Ginger, you be muted again. I just want to let you
know. I am back.
Were you coughing up a lung and stuff?
And blowing my nose.
Oh, poor Ginger.
I know. I'm trying not to die over here. I kid you not. It was flaking snow yesterday morning during the show. So I looked out my window. And then by yesterday evening, I went for a walk downtown along the trails here. And I didn't even have to have a jacket on. It was that warm. It was nice. And this morning, it's flipping cold again.
Oh, wow. I wish
so
I could
I'm dying. Her. I'm this is not cool.
No, she's not dying. You just a little congestion. We got it, too.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. There was a big banging noise going on. It
okay,
startled me.
In that case, right. You want me to take a story? Do you need to go check it out?
Yes, I do. I'll be right back.
All right. Well, while she goes to do that, let me see about some other things that are going on. It's my switchboard sound. Let me turn that down a little bit for you guys. I know some of you are like, how unprofessional. Well, according to a recent interview with Mr. Sefton Hill, he's a game director over at Rocksteady, they're lamenting the UK's diminishing talent pool as developers are forced to travel in search of employment. He says, a lot of my friends have moved abroad to get work. There's a real talent drain. This is what he told CBG. He said, Montreal is a central place for development, and it's mainly because the tax breaks they give are so phenomenal, which we told you about in the first half of our news newscast. He said he explained that while the home computing and programming history of the UK meant that while there was up and coming talent, the talent was rapidly leaving the country for cities like Montreal, where the industry received government support. He says, we have great developers here, but those numbers are dwindling. He says, you think about the quality developers like Bizarre Creations, BlackRock, people who are making really good games and are going out of business. Those guys are so talented. How can that happen? If they would been in Montreal's position with that backing from the government, it's such a big industry now, and we could be world leaders. Rocksteady has found acclaim with its Batman franchise, Batman, which we also just mentioned, Arkham Asylum, shipped 4.6 million copies in 1 week and garnered a huge amount of positive reviews as well. So UK is having some issues. And you got a couple of comments on GI.biz where some people are disagreeing with that. One Mr. James Palmer, who is over at Red Kite Games, says he's inclined to agree. The UK has a huge talent pool of creatives and developers that recently, due to studio closures, have gone overseas seeking work. Publishers and developers considering setting up in a given location need to think past tax break opportunities and goes where the talent is from. Actually, there's talent everywhere if you look. There's a lot of talented developers here in Houston that get absolutely no attention, and they do fantastic work. I keep bringing up my guys, Indestructible Can. You also have a Revelation Interactive here. I think Sharkbite is gone because they were unable to make it happen, but they might still be floating around here somewhere. But you got tons. The only one here that's for some reason doing okay is TimeGate Studios, but TimeGate is so underground. They're really about 15 minutes away from where I am now, and we can't even speak with them. They're so underground. They do their game, and then that's it. You buy it, they don't want to talk to anybody. There's no developer diary. There's no, hey, come see our studio. You know how they do it out in L.A., even up in Austin. They're really very, very underground, and I think part of the reason is, well, it seems like we have nobody here. That's what it comes across as. It's always shocking. When Ubisoft came here, God, some years ago, I want to say 2005, and they did this whole Ghost Recon thing, I remember talking to Brooklyn, who was, you know, that's when the Frag Dolls were the first group. We're on group three now, but this was the first original Frag Dolls. She was shocked. She says, where'd all these people come from? We didn't even think there was any gamers in Houston. We were actually going to skip Houston. And
how would there be no gamers in Houston?
I don't really know. I think a lot of the way that Houston looks when you get here, people expect it to be like the desert for one. People who've never been here,
or really,
who've never been to Texas at all or been to Houston, they think this desert, this cactus. They watch too much TV.
Apparently, we all ride white ponies and wear 10-gallon hats.
Exactly. Some people keep asking me, have you ever ridden a horse? I was like, once, I think when I was 21, for like 2 minutes I rode a horse. I've never been close to one for the most part, you know. So, there's horses down the street from my house, true enough. We do have retained some, you know, some country and westernness, but it's not like it is on some TV shows. So I think that's it. And Houston is, when we say a large city, it is very spread out. You know, one side of the city to the other may take you an hour.
And we're talking about just downtown. You know, the general metropolis of Houston is massive. So when you come here, it's not like it is in other cities. You know, New York, okay, this is a centralized location. We're going to do it here, and everybody can get, you know, here. We don't really have a centralized location. It's kind of we over here, you over here.
It's sprawling.
We're very sprawling. There's several areas of Houston that are, you know, busy and popping, and there's lots of buildings, and it looks like, you know, downtown, but it's not. You know, Westheimer area is one of those areas. Then you have, even though Sugar Land doesn't really want to classify itself as Houston, I say you're still, you know, a suburb of Houston.
Yeah.
You want to admit it or not. Then you've got Bel Air, which is a city within the city of Houston. They're actually inside the city, but they don't want to claim themselves. You know, so we have all that going on, and it gets confusing, I think, to people when they think about coming here. Same with the Nintendo bus. They come through every year, and they do call us. And ask where can we meet. The past few times it's been up at Fox, because, well, Fox is not really centralized. It's been up at the Fox station, and they've come. But it's a safe place, let's put it that way. It's gated, and security is why we do it that way. But but they didn't even know where to go. They were like, where do we go? Where do we meet y'all? We were like, we don't really know. We don't know either. We live here. We don't know. Where could we, you know, make sure nobody rushes the Nintendo van and tries to take stuff out of it. But I think that's a lot of the problem. But there's tons of gamers here. There's tons of developers. Even the
out of the van, I'd just be taking the van.
Girl, if I could, that's a nice van. The Nintendo van. Oh, that is a lovely piece of machinery. A big high def screen. There's things popping out of the ceiling, and you know you can actually play the Wii inside the van. There's enough space.
Oh wow, that is a big van.
It's nice. It doesn't look big from outside, but it is gorgeous. I think people look and they just don't think there's any gamers here. Even the gamers that are here don't know other gamers are here. And that's part of the reason why I'm so reluctant to take our gamers to another city, or at least base it out of another city, because this is my hometown. I would like to see my gamers have some pride in where they're from. And our people that are going to school here for gaming, because we do have colleges that are doing it now, don't feel like they have to go to Seattle when they're done. You know, okay, I'm going to stay here as long as I can. Now I got to move to Seattle, or I got to move to Austin.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my spiel for the morning. Ms. Ginger, you got
right, I got bad news, people. This just popped up. We knew it was going to happen, though. We knew it.
Uh-oh.
GamePolitics.com, AT&T, the devil, begins selectively throttling smartphone customers with unlimited data plans.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound so unlimited now, does it?
So is Virgin Mobile, but continue. Mm-hmm. Tell them.
All right, so in 2011, AT&T warned its heavy data-using mobile customers that it would reduce their connection speed if said usage inched into the top 5%. AT&T is defining that metric as anyone who uses more than 2.1 gigabytes of data a month. Chronicled in a New York Times blog post, one of the AT&T customers hit the 2.1 gigabyte mark and had his connection throttled. The problem the customer says is that he has a data limit of 3 gigabytes a month because a legacy unlimited plan. Ooh, that's not cool. All right, so in 2010, AT&T discontinued its unlimited data plans, but customers who were already enrolled in the plan had the option to be grandfathered in and not affected by the changes. Josh Kozin, the AT&T customer we just wrote about, was among the first to report receiving a throttle notice. Basically, AT&T told him that his connection would be slowed down until the next billing cycle. Kozin says that this was unfair to be throttled because he pays $30 for an unlimited plan and has a 3 gigabyte data cap. I'm with you, Mr. Kozin. That's kind of crap. All right, so in a phone interview with AT&T spokesman Mark Siegel told the New York Times that the top 5% of its heaviest data users has typically use 2 gigabytes of data or more a month. He also claims that their throttling policy does not target everyone that exceeds that number and that it is done on a case-by-case basis. I'm sure that provides solace to customers like John Kozin. Mr. Siegel says, why do I want to say Siegel? Anyways, there's a very good chance you wouldn't be slowed. He went on to say that less than 1% of AT&T smartphone customers were affected by the policy last month. See, that's the deal. You know, I know a lot of these people who probably are paying for the unlimited data aren't actually using much of their unlimited data. So you're throttling the people who are using the unlimited data. But I'm just curious, what's the percentage of the people who actually have paid for unlimited data? How many of them actually ever even come close media cap. And is it fair to actually be throttling the people who are if they're not actually affecting anybody else's service?
Part of the reason why I got unlimited data is because when I was with AT&T and paid the
$2.99,
I would run out of texting, in a matter of hours. And then from then on, it was 10 cents per text, 10 cents per every time I access Facebook, 10 cents every time I access Twitter. So part of the reason why, that's part of the reason why I went to Virgin Mobile. But even they are starting to do so. But their cap is pretty high. But as we start to grow bigger here, then I'm going to start getting closer to that cap, which means I'm now looking at Boost Mobile with very hearts in my eyes going, I'm coming to you next. As soon as Virgin fails me, I'm coming to you. The minute we hit that cap, it's like, okay, I'm done. I'm moving on. Because they're still unlimited with no cap. And after that, I even got further eyes on Cricket Mobile. Same thing. There's no cap. With no cap. I'm not understanding this. I need to understand why we feel the need to cap the data. Is it putting extra strain strain on the network to do so?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, we got to find a different way. Cloud, something. Something's got to be done other than charging us extra money. Especially AT&T is really bad. Horrible.
Yes, I hate you, AT&T.
I hate them, too. And
I will never go back to you. Verizon for life, baby.
They used to be so good to me, AT&T. And as I tell you, I was with AT&T through every incarnation they had. So I was very hurt. To have them come to me and say, by the way, we have taken away your free nights and weekends and your free texting and free, email, all that stuff. You now have to pay for it.
Yes.
What? I've had this free since, 1998. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a break.
Time Warner. Time Warner, remember that when Verizon Fios comes here, I'm leaving you.
Oh,
I'm leaving you and never looking back, baby.
So very gone. All right, so before we have to get out of here, Activision Blizzard has doubled their annual profits to $1.1 billion. That's right, we said $1.1 billion.
Did they sell their soul? How are they doing this?
I guess they did. They've doubled their annual net profit to $1.1 billion and another record year for the company.
People stop buying those stupid bully horses and all the stupid ugly little pets.
For calendar year 2011, the company posted revenues of $4.76 billion, up from $4.5 billion the previous year, and almost $800 million higher than its outlook. Net profit rose from $418 billion in 2012 to just over $1.8 billion. The company's digital business was also at an all-time high of $1.6 billion, or around 34% of total sales. The company plans to buy back a further $1 billion worth of net shares from its parent company, Vivendi. Yes, didn't know that, did you? In 2012, the key to that success in both physical and digital retail was the Call of Duty franchise, which enjoyed its eighth consecutive year of revenue growth. That Modern Warfare 3 was the best-selling game in dollars of 2011 is by now widely known, but its predecessors also sold strongly. Black Ops was the fifth best-selling game, and CEO Hirschberg claimed that Modern Warfare 2 and World at War had combined sales in the millions. The franchise also saw record engagement, with Modern Warfare 3, Black Ops, and Modern Warfare 2 occupying the top three slots in the most played games on Xbox Live. Across the entire franchise, Call of Duty now has 40 million MAUs. As of January 31st this year, Call of Duty Elite has 7 million subscribers, with 1.5 million people signing up for a premium annual membership priced at $49.99 a year. Activision Blizzard claims that Elite is now the third big game subscription service behind Xbox Live and World of Warcraft. The company's major new IP launch of the year, Skylanders, also performed beyond expectations.
Wait, back up. Isn't Elite like that Facebook for COD?
I don't know.
Stop buying stupid stuff, people.
Skylanders also performed beyond expectations. It was the number one kids game of the year, of the calendar year, and sold 20 million toys and accessories. Skylanders and Call of Duty Elite were repeatedly cited as two of the company's main vectors for growth in 2012. However, that could change drastically depending on the number of products Blizzard chooses to release. World of Warcraft finished the year with 10.2 million subscribers, and Mike Morhaime noting that there was a minimal difference over the prior quarter. In addition, the WoW annual pass announced at BlizzCon 2011 garnered more than 1 million registrations. However, Bobby Kotick confirmed that including Diablo 3,
Blizzard would release at least two products in 2012. Blizzard DFTA is likely to fill another slot, but it's still unannounced. It's still an unannounced MMO featured heavily in the investor presentation slides. Another key area for growth in 2012 is the free-to-play microtransaction-funded Call of Duty being developed by the, for the Chinese market. Anyway, they did fantastic, and they do have another super secret project, which I could not get out of my dinner companion would not tell me any details. I tried. Even drunk, they wouldn't tell me anything. So, sorry. I tried to get the juice for y'all. It didn't work. And the fluffy cakes don't work because, you know, girlfriend's sitting next to him. I think I could have got it if I'd have flashed a fluffy cake. Her fluffy cakes are bigger, so, you know, you gotta yield to the power of the fluffy cakes. Ginger, you're muted. And I know you're saying stuff.
Oh, I'm all talking about fluffy cakes.
Fluffy
cakes. We didn't even do the boobs yet today, I don't
well,
think.
Well, he's out on the beach, so no boobs
yeah,
for him.
Yeah, but there are no boobs for you, Jay. I'm still mad at you. Were you actually Twittering us?
Yeah, he was. So.
Twittering us from the beach last night. Oh, my God. So mad at you, Jay. I'm so mad at you. I'm so disappointed in you, Jay.
Right. Well.
The beach.
Yes, he's at the beach. He's a dirty, dirty beach boy.
Oh, I've got names I could call him, but it's daytime.
You tweet them to him. There's no filter on the Twitter. On the Twitter. Look, I'm on the Twitter. No filter on the Twitter. That's what it's going to be called. You know how the older people still call the remote the clicker? That's what we're going to call it when we're old, the Twitter.
I don't think I know anybody who calls it the clicker.
You got to start listening. The really, really old people, they're probably in their like 80s or 90s. They always say, hand me the clicker. Because the remote used to click. If you look at the old movies, it used to click and make a clicking noise.
That is true.
So they call it the clicker. So when we're old, we're going to call Twitter the tweeter.
Now here's a blast from the past for you kids. Some of y'all probably won't remember. Back when cable, there were no actual wireless remotes. It was a big wired remote. It was brown and ugly, and it had like 18 buttons across, and you pushed them.
Because that's all you had was 18 channels.
Yes. There was none of this 493 million channels. No, it was 18. And I want to say 18 was MTV, actually.
You might be right. When it actually played music.
Yes, yes, when it actually played music.
And videos. Now, nothing. Anyway, time for us to roll out.
Now it's all those stupid Jersey idiots who need to be slapped.
Yes, we'll talk. We'll have a show about that. We got to go, guys. We'll see you guys Monday, bright and early. Stay out of trouble.
Girls,